Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1156. BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now Part 16, An Ounce of Prevention. This is being recorded on October 10th of the year 2020. This program will not only be interrogatory in nature, interrogatory in a frightening way, it will also be, I would say, in one sense, reviewing, and in another sense, taking material we have covered in the past and casting it into a new context. The title of the subtitle of the program, it obviously refers to the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. That is an ironic slash sarcastic reference, because what we are looking at in this program is the possibility that overlapping programs being undertaken by civilian and military institutions to ostensibly prevent future epidemics or pandemics may in fact contain the genesis of the creation of future epidemics and pandemics. The subtitle might actually be Unit 731 Redux. That is a reference to Unit 731, the notorious Japanese biological warfare program from World War II, the most advanced in the world, and the files and cell cultures that survived and some of the same personnel were incorporated into the U.S. Biological Warfare Research Program at the end of World War II. That notorious program, Unit 731, was officially titled the Epidemic Prevention and Water Purification Department of the Kwantung Army. As I have noted in the past, there is no real difference between offensive and defensive biological warfare research. If you are studying how we beasties infect and sicken or kill humans, animals, or plants, it is the same research, whether you call it offensive or defensive. And in this program, we're going to be looking at programs and research which nominally are dedicated to preventing future epidemics or pandemics. And we will be asking, I guess, the musical question, in For the Record programs 11, 47, 48, and 49, we took a look at Josef Mengele and his networking with and work for elements of our national security establishment. That is but one example of the very worst Axis scientists being brought to the U.S. and collaborating with our biological warfare and chemical warfare programs during the Cold War. Something people might want to think about, and we have spoken about the Republican branch, the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, inextricably linked with the Underground Reich and with the Galen organization. Think about this. If someone of the same mindset as Josef Mengele, perhaps even associates of his or tutees or trainees of his or even children, because it is a safe bet that he had kids, what would someone with the Mengele mentality do with the technologies that we are talking about here? In other words, if you took the things we are talking about here and gave them to Josef Mengele, what would he do with them? Reviewing very briefly something that we've looked at in past programs, a short excerpt from the book, Gene Wars, Military Control Over the New Technologies. This was published over 30 years ago, authored by Charles Piller, P-I-L-L-E-R, and Keith R. Yamamoto, Y-A-M-A-M-O-T-O, published in hardcover by William Morrow in 1988. And it references a piece of wisdom from Jonathan King, who is described here. Jonathan King, who has chaired the microbial physiology study section for the NIH and the National Institutes of Health, which have networked with both Pentagon and CIA in the past, as we have seen. Beginning again, Jonathan King, who has chaired the microbial physiology study section for the National Institutes of Health, believes that without intensive independent scrutiny, the Pentagon is free to obscure its true goals. The Defense Department appears to be pursuing many narrow applied goals that are by nature offensive, such as the genetic improvement, unquote, of biological warfare agents, unquote, King says, again quoting, but to achieve political acceptability, they mask these intentions under forms of research such as vaccine development, which sound defensive. And certainly, some of the bat-borne coronaviruses that are the one of which SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19, they have been subjected to gain-of-function experiments. The improvement, the genetic improvement, described here by Jonathan King, and the programs under which this has been done are represented as epidemic prevention programs or something to, well, epidemic prevention programs. Some of them are civilian, some of them are officially military, and some of them are civilian but with financing from institutions like the United States Agency for International Development that have fronted four CIA programs in the past, with financing coming from sources like that. And given the fact that research into infectious organisms and pandemic-causing organisms can be undertaken very sincerely and for the best of reasons, but then once the results have been achieved, they can be abused by a very small number of people to produce epidemics, to produce pandemics, to produce genocide, and we need to think about that very carefully. Reviewing again something from the all-important Whitney Webb article from The Last American Vagabond from January 30th of 2020, bats, gene editing, and bioweapons. Recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. And again, think about epidemic prevention as it was construed by Unit 731. It wasn't epidemic prevention. They were looking to cause epidemics and genocide. And thinking about what Jonathan King was warning about in the 1980s, and those considerations need to be borne in mind as I review some of this, and ask yourself, what would Josef Mengele do with things like gene driving that we will review here in a minute? From the Whitney Webb article, again, bats, gene editing, and bioweapons, recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. The Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, began spending millions on such research in 2018, and some of those Pentagon-funded studies were conducted at known U.S. military bioweapons labs bordering China and resulted in the discovery of dozens of new coronavirus strains as recently as last April. Furthermore, the ties of the Pentagon's main biodefense lab to a virology institute in Wuhan, China, where the current outbreak is believed to have begun, have been unreported in English-language media thus far. For instance, DARPA spent $10 million on one project in 2018, quote, to unravel the complex causes of bat-borne viruses that have recently made the jump to humans, causing concern among global health officials, unquote. epidemic prevention, question mark. Another research project backed by both DARPA and NIH saw researchers at Colorado State University examine the coronavirus that causes Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, in bats and camels, quote, to understand the role of these hosts in transmitting disease to humans. For instance, one study conducted in southern China in 2018 resulted in the discovery of 89 new, quote, novel bat coronavirus strains, unquote, that used the same receptor as the coronavirus known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. That study was jointly funded by the Chinese government's Ministry of Science and Technology, the USAID, an organization long alleged to be a front for U.S. intelligence, and the U.S. National Institute of Health, parenthetically, for which Jonathan King worked, which has collaborated with both the CIA and the Pentagon on infectious disease and bioweapons research. And note the military and civilian programs aimed ostensibly and perhaps in good faith by the vast majority of people involved with these programs, bearing in mind that it only takes a very small number of malefactors to take some of these infectious wee beasties and turn them into weapons of mass destruction. Note the civilian and military programs to prevent, ostensibly to prevent, epidemics or pandemics, and note the participation, as noted above, of USAID and NIH in these programs, and some of them are actually the Pentagon programs, such as Project Preempt. Again, from the Whitney Webb article. Many of these recent research projects are related to DARPA's Preventing Emerging Pathogenic Threats, or PREEMPT, program, which was officially announced in April of 2018. PREEMPT focuses specifically on animal reservoirs of disease, specifically bats, and DARPA even noted in its press release in the program that it, quote, is aware of biosafety and biosecurity sensitivities that could arise, quote, due to the nature of the research. In addition, while both DARPA's PREEMPT program and the Pentagon's open interest in bats as bioweapons were announced in 2018, the U.S. military, specifically the Department of Defense's Cooperative Threat Reduction Program, began funding research involving bats and deadly pathogens, including the coronaviruses MERS and SARS, a year prior to that, in 2017. So note Project PREEMPT and the Department of Defense's Cooperative Threat Reduction Program. We're going to look at things like the EcoHealth Alliance and Project PREDICT by USAID. And we will take a look at programs involving the lab in Wuhan, China, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, that were financed by U.S. intelligence. Later on, we're going to take a look at a very important piece of information, and that is how viruses are studied in the laboratory. They are basically inactivated, and they are frozen with nitrogen. This would make an accidental release of the virus very unlikely, and all things considered from the actuarial standpoint, given the full court press against China and the covert operations and overt operations, which I have documented at length, along with the weaponized media coverage, the possibility that anything other than a deliberate covert op, the COVID-19 op, is small. Once again, from the Whitney Webb article. Now ask yourself, what would Josef Mengele do with technologies like gene driving and with vaccine development program, bearing in mind that Jonathan King noted that the genetic improvement of biological warfare agents and the development of vaccines were often used to mask offensive biological warfare research. What would Josef Mengele do with technologies like these? Once again from the Whitney Webb article, concerns about Pentagon experiments with biological weapons have garnered renewed media attention, particularly after it was revealed in 2017 that DARPA was the top funder of the controversial gene drive technology, which has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. One more time for emphasis. Concerns about Pentagon experiments with biological weapons have garnered renewed media attention, particularly after it was revealed in 2017 that DARPA was the top funder of the controversial gene drive technology, which has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. At least two of DARPA's studies using this controversial technology were classified and, quote, focused on the potential military application of gene-drive technology. One more time. At least two of DARPA's studies using this controversial technology were classified and, quote, focused on the potential military application of gene-drive technology and use of gene drives in agriculture, unquote, according to media reports. The revelation came after an organization called the ETC Group, that's Edward Thomas Charles Group, obtained over 1,000 emails on the military's interest in the technology as part of a Freedom of Information Act request. Co-director of the ETC program, of the ETC group, Jim Thomas, said that this technology may be used as a biological weapon. Quote, gene drives are a powerful and dangerous new technology, and potential biological weapons could have disastrous impacts on peace, food security, and the environment, especially if misused. The fact that gene drive development is now being primarily funded and structured by the U.S. military raises alarming questions about this entire field. And in the past, we have spoken about both Moderna and Inovio being two of the DARPA-funded companies that are involved with developing vaccines for the coronavirus. And note that the Moderna vaccine uses messenger RNA to change the genome of the person receiving the vaccine, and Inovio uses DNA vaccine to do the same thing. The point being that here, two of the DARPA-funded companies developing coronavirus vaccines use the injection of genetic material to change the genome of the person receiving the vaccine, or persons receiving the vaccine. What might be going on vis-a-vis gene drive technology? And even more terrifyingly, thinking about the fact that projections are that white people will be a minority in this country by mid-century, and with countries like China, not a superpower, still a developing country, but developing very quickly and an enormous country, think about what a white supremacist, and I don't mean some street-level individual, but rather some of the people that exist in the high cabals of power, as Winston Churchill referred to them. Think about how they would feel looking at the world that is going to be, if it continues as it is, dominated by non-whites. And I would not bet that the white power structure in this country and elsewhere, including the people that spawned the Third Reich and that have evolved from the Underground Reich or with the in the Underground Reich and into a position of power in this country. I would not bet that they are going to allow something like that to take place. And bear in mind that we've looked at AIDS. And the evidence is very strong that AIDS was created. And purebred Northern Europeans or Aryans have a hereditary immunity to HIV infection. That is the only ethnic group that does. Not even the rest of the white race. Only purebred Northern Europeans or Aryans have the CCR5 Delta 32 allele, and no other group of white people and no non-whites have that gene. Just imagine what the likes of Josef Mengele or Kurt Blom or so many of the people we have looked at, what would they do with gene drive technology? What would they do with vaccines that will change the genetic material of those receiving them, like the Inovio DNA vaccine or the Moderna mRNA vaccine? What would they do with technology like that and with a world that will, with the U.S. dominated by non-whites and a world in which countries like China will have a tremendous impact? Well, I would not bet that the very worst things will become manifest. And I wonder if some of the epidemic prevention programs, civilian or ostensibly civilian and military, in fact mask the intent, perhaps only on a very small percentage of the people involved with them, to use these things for offensive purposes, to use epidemic prevention for pandemic creation and for biogenocide. Again, from the Whitney Webb article about Moderna and Inovio. The second pharmaceutical company that was selected by CEPI to develop a vaccine for the new coronavirus is Moderna Incorporated, which will develop a vaccine for the novel coronavirus of concern in collaboration with the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and which will be funded entirely by CEPI. The vaccine in question, as opposed to Inovio's DNA vaccine, will be a messenger mRNA vaccine. Though different than the DNA vaccine, mRNA vaccines still use genetic material, quote, to direct the body's cells to produce intracellular membrane or secreted proteins, unquote. Moderna's mRNA treatments, including its mRNA vaccines, were largely developed using a $25 million grant from DARPA, and it often touts its strategic alliance with DARPA in press releases. More from the Whitney Webb article. The very companies chosen to develop a vaccine to combat the coronavirus outbreak are themselves strategic allies of DARPA. For instance, the top funders of Inovio Pharmaceuticals, including both DARPA and the Pentagon's Defense Threat Reduction Agency, or DPRA, and the company has received millions in dollars in grants from DARPA, including a $45 million grant to develop a vaccine for Ebola. Inovio specializes in the creation of DNA immunotherapies and DNA vaccines, which contain genetically engineered DNA that causes the cells of the recipient to produce an antigen and can permanently alter a person's DNA. Inovio previously developed a DNA vaccine for Zika virus, but to date, no DNA vaccine has been approved for use in humans in the U.S. And bear in mind that Moncef Slaoui, in charge of the Operation Warp Speed vaccine development program for the Trump administration, was in charge of product development for Moderna, and still holds stock in one of the companies that will be producing that virus. Just think about the possibilities of using gene driving and putting some of that technology into vaccines and then compelling people or simply motivating people to get the vaccine to prevent infection by the SARS-CoV-2. How might a white supremacist or someone with that outlook, what would Josef Mengele do? with these mRNA and DNA vaccines, and with a world that, and with the U.S. and the world that will be dominated by non-whites. Would they use gene drive technology and the vaccines and the research garnered very possibly in the most sincerely altruistic fashion by the vast majority of individuals involved? Would they use that to implement genocide and to implement the kinds of things that the Third Reich wanted to do? Well, it's a rhetorical question. Of course they would do that. There is nothing else that they would do. And again, reviewing very quickly an article that we looked at from the New York Times of July 14th of 2020 by William J. Broad, B-R-O-A-D, disease detected forth pointed questions. It's about Dr. Daniel R. Lucy. And one of the things he has spoken about is, quote, to that, he urges the WHO investigators to look for any signs of gain-of-function research, the deliberate enhancement of pathogens to make them more dangerous. Well, the WHO doesn't have to look for those. We'll cite plenty of those by way of review in this program. Skipping down in the William J. Bob article about Daniel R. Lucy. Speaking of gain-of-function modifications, debate over its wisdom erupted in 2011 after researchers announced success in making the highly lethal H5N1 strain of avian flu easily transmissible through the air between ferrets, at least in the laboratory. In his blog, Dr. Lucy asked, quote, what, if any, unquote, gain-of-function studies were done on coronaviruses in Wuhan, elsewhere in China, or in collaboration with foreign laboratories? Well, I'd be happy to answer Dr. Lucy's question. We'll answer it right in this program. And again, that by way of review. And skipping down in the article, a Chinese study of the coronavirus, the SARS-CoV-2, it was found to be infecting, quote, in a variety of animals. It reported that cats and ferrets were highly susceptible to the pathogen. One of the things we spoke about in, for the record, 1116 and 1117 were those gain-of-function machinations performed on the H5N1 strain of avian flu, and we wondered if some of those might have been adapted to the SARS-CoV-2. Again, that is an interesting question because ferrets are highly susceptible to that virus. Is that, does that bear any relation to the gain-of-function experiments we looked at? And bear in mind that the gain-of-function experiments were suspended in 2014. The Trump administration then reactivated those or renewed those in 2017. Now, Dr. Lucy asked the question, what, if any, unquote, gain-of-function studies were done on coronaviruses in Wuhan, elsewhere in China, or in collaboration with foreign laboratories? I will be more than happy to answer Dr. Lucy's question. Again, that's L-U-C-E-Y. From the Scientist of November 16th of 2015, lab-made coronavirus triggers debate by Jeff Oxt. And this talks about Ralph Barrich, a researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. As we will see, he was part of a program that was undertaken in collaboration with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and financed by the American financing came from the U.S. Agency for International Development, a frequent cover for CIA operations in the past. So, Dr. Lucy asked the question, what, if any, gain-of-function studies were done on coronaviruses in Wuhan or in collaboration with foreign laboratories? I'd be happy to answer Dr. Lucy's question. Again, lab-made coronavirus triggers debate by Jeff Oxt, AKSC, from the Scientist of November 16, 2015, 5 years ago. Ralph Barrich, B-A-R-I-C, an infectious disease researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill last week, November 9th, published a study on his team's efforts to engineer a virus with the surface protein of the SHCO14 coronavirus found in horseshoe bats in China and the backbone of one that causes human-like severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, in mice. The hybrid virus could infect human airway cells and cause disease in mice. The results demonstrate the ability of the SHCO14 surface protein to bind to and infect human cells, validating concerns that this virus or other coronaviruses found in bat species may be capable of making the leap to people without first evolving in an intermediate host, Nature magazine reported. They also reignited the debate about whether that information justifies the risk of such work, such as gain-of-function research. So if the new virus escaped, nobody could predict the trajectory, Simon Wayne Hobson, a virologist at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, told Nature. As we will see, an accidental escape appears highly unlikely, but once someone has made a virus like this, and once that information has been published, as we have looked at repeatedly, any virus can be synthesized from scratch using contemporary technology in the laboratory. It is not unlike a 3D printer in which you can make a working handgun or firearm from scratch. And Dr. Ralph Barrich, or Professor Ralph Barrich, again, was selected to recreate the SARS-CoV-2 virus using that technology. As we will review, he not only performed a gain-of-function machination on exactly this type of coronavirus, the programs in which he was working were jointly financed by the Chinese government and the U.S. Agency for International Development and the National Institutes of Health, which have fronted for Pentagon and CIA in the past. And it is this laboratory and has been the focal point of all of the right-wing propaganda that the Trump administration, Secretary of State Pompeo, Steve Bannon, people in Australia have been citing. For example, a Murdoch publication from Australia, the Daily Telegraph of May 4th of 2020, article by Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-I, Markson, M-A-R-K-S-O-N, Coronavirus New South Wales. Dossier lays out case against China bat virus program, but note the following, skipping down. There, November 2015 study, that's the one we just saw with Dr. Barrich or Professor Barrich, their November 2015 study, done in conjunction with the University of North Carolina, concluded that the SARS-like virus could jump directly from bats to humans, and there was no treatment that could help. Skipping down. The potential to prepare for and mitigate future outbreaks must be weighed against the risk of creating more dangerous pathogens, they wrote. Again, Epidemic Prevention Program, Unit 731. And again, I'm not necessarily impugning the integrity of Dr. Barrich or Professor Barrich or any other individual, but once this research has been conducted and once the results have been published, a very small number of malefactors can take that work and create havoc, implement genocide. And just imagine taking gene-driving capabilities, introducing those into Pentagon-financed vaccine production, and then getting people to take those out of worries that they would get sick. And again, the possibilities are remarkable. And if you think for one minute that there aren't a lot of people, not just in the Trump administration, but people of that ilk who would do just that, well, I feel sorry for you. Now, noting Dr. Xi from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and again from this propaganda piece from the Murdoch-owned Daily Telegraph of Australia, one of Dr. Xi's co-authors on that paper, again, to indicate, yes, the Chinese made the virus. One of Dr. Xi's co-authors on that paper, Professor Ralph Barrich from North Carolina University, said in an interview with Science Daily at the time, quote, "This virus is highly pathogenic, and treatments developed against the original SARS virus in 2002 and the ZMAP drugs used to fight Ebola failed to neutralize and control this particular virus. And again, by way of review, this from GM Watch from May 20th of 2020 by Jonathan Matthews and Claire Robinson. Wuhan and U.S. scientists used undetectable methods of genetic engineering on bat coronaviruses, and a couple of excerpts. Evidence has emerged that researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, or WIV, in China, working in collaboration with scientists in the USA, have been genetically engineering bat viruses for the past several years to investigate infectivity using undetectable methods. The WIV is just a few miles from a Chinese city where the COVID-19 pandemic is thought to have originated and is the chief suspect in the possible scenario that the virus emerged from a lab. I like the emerged from a lab a lot better than, quote, escaped, unquote. Dr. Richard Ebright, an infectious, Dr. Richard Ebright, E-B-R-I-G-H-T, an infectious disease expert at Rutgers University in the U.S., has alerted the public to evidence that WIV and U.S.-based researchers were genetically engineering bat viruses to investigate their ability to infect humans using commonly used methods that leave no sign or signature of human manipulation. Ebright flagged up a scientific paper published in 2017 by WIV scientists, including Xi Zheng Li, the virologist leading the research into bat coronaviruses, working in collaboration with Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K, of the U.S.-based EcoHealth Alliance. Again, this is one of these pandemic prevention programs, and again, it may very well be that Peter Daszak and the vast majority of people involved with this are absolutely sincere in their desire to prevent future pandemics. But once you do the research, once you create the wee beasties, it only takes a very small number of willing malefactors to use that for genocidal purposes. And again, EcoHealth Alliance like Project Preempt or the defense, the Cooperative Defense Threat Reduction Program of the Pentagon. This is an epidemic prevention program. And I'm asking the question from a functional standpoint, is this in fact like Unit 731? Have malefactors, maybe only a small number of them, because it doesn't take many people to produce a biological warfare catastrophe. Might they very well be using things like this as a cover or a or camouflage or a smokescreen to, in fact, bring about catastrophe? And note who financed the U.S. EcoHealth Alliance. And again, this is from GM Watch. Funding was shared between Chinese and U.S. institutions, the latter including the U.S. National Institutes of Health, again, which have collaborated with CIA and the Pentagon in the past, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, again, a common cover for CIA. Continuing, the researchers report having conducted virus infectivity experiments where genetic material is combined from different varieties of SARS-related coronaviruses to form novel chimeric, unquote, versions. This formed part of their research into what mutations were needed to allow certain bat coronaviruses to bind to the human ACE2 receptor, a key step in the human infectivity of SARS-CoV-2. Skipping down. A group of scientists from the University of North Carolina in the USA, with the WIV's Xi Zhengli as a collaborator, published a study in 2015 describing similar experiments involving chimeric coronaviruses, which were also created using standard, undetectable genetic engineering techniques. And once again, we're going to take a look at the same overlapping series of programs. The Trump administration pulled financing from this, and we're going to take a look once again at the U.S. Agency for International Development, a frequent cover for CIA, and their PREDICT project, capital P, that will predict, all in capitals. And we're going to take a look at a very important piece of information that is stated here by Dr. Christine Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, the principal investigator with that program, and she notes that when viruses are studied in the laboratory, they are inactivated and they are frozen in nitrogen subsequent to the collection process. The point being that an, quote, accidental, unquote, escape of the virus is then the subsequent manifestation of a pandemic is extremely unlikely. And that if the virus, quote, emerged, unquote, I like that word, from the lab, it was almost certainly deliberate. From ABC News of May 1st of 2020, Trump administration pulls NIH grant for coronavirus research over ties to Wuhan lab at heart of conspiracy theories. Unquote. This is by Connor Finnegan, F-I-N-N-E-G-A-N. The cancellation of the grant after more than a decade of work in this field seems to be tied to EcoHealth Alliance's partnership with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, the biomedical lab at the heart of conspiracy theories that the Chinese government created or unleashed the virus, or the unproven thesis that the outbreak started with an accident because of faulty safety standards in the lab. Either way, the group expressed regret at the decision by the National Institutes of Health to terminate funding, saying its work has helped in, quote, designing vaccines and drugs to protect us from COVID-19 and other coronavirus threats, unquote, and pointing out the Wuhan Institute's participation had been approved by the NIH for years, including just last year under Donald Trump, skipping down. EcoHealth Alliance has worked with that lab for over a decade, according to a source familiar with the grant, as has the U.S. Agency for International Development's PREDICT project, which for over 10 years has also studied viruses in animals and prepared local partners around the world to detect that kind of, quote, spillover, unquote. But in a letter last Friday, the National Institutes of Health informed the EcoHealth Alliance it was terminating the grant and denying it access to the remaining $369,819 in its account for fiscal year 2020. Again, the EcoHealth Alliance has worked with the WIV, so has the U.S. Agency for International Development's PREDICT project. Again, another, quote, epidemic prevention, unquote, program. And note, as we have looked at in the past, the U.S. Army's Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases has also had a long-standing cooperative program with the WIV. And skipping down in this article, EcoHealth Alliance has received NIH funding for this work since 2008, amounting to $5.96 million over 12 years, according to NIH data. That work has helped, quote, to develop predictive models of global hotspots, unquote, for the future emergence of bat viruses, unquote, and used its, quote, large repository of bat biological samples to conduct targeted surveillance in these hotspots, unquote, for known and undiscovered bat pathogens, according to the group. Since fiscal year 2014, that work has been awarded to EcoHealth Alliance's, quote, Understanding the Risk of Bat Coronavirus Emergence, unquote, project in particular, which is explicitly focused on China and done in partnership with the Wuhan Institute and others, quote, This project aims to understand what factors increase the risk of the next coronavirus emerging in people by studying COV diversity or coronavirus diversity in a critical zoonotic reservoir, bats, at sites of high risk for emergence, such as wildlife markets, in an emerging disease hotspot, China, the group's NIH-approved research abstract said, skipping down. But while U.S. intelligence agencies look for clues of a potential lab accident. Epidemiological experts say it's highly unlikely the first transmission happened that way. One more time. But while U.S. intelligence agencies are looking for clues of a potential lab accident, epidemiological experts say it's highly unlikely the first transmission happened that way. Virus samples in labs are almost never still infectious after being frozen in nitrogen during the collection process and then inactivated in the lab to preserve their genetic sequence. One more time. Quote, it's an unlikely probability because the laboratory is a controlled setting and people wear personal protective equipment. I've seen hearsay that they maybe didn't have enough or weren't skilled enough, but there are barriers, huge barriers between people and viruses in the laboratory setting, said Dr. Christine Johnson, principal investigator with USAID's PREDICT project, which will end this September 10th after 10 years and 2 6-month extensions as USAID launches a new project that applies the data PREDICT collected. And again, what data did PREDICT collect? Skipping down. In the face of that, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has now started to call into question of China's biomedical labs, demanding that they provide international inspectors access to them, although it is unclear if the administration has formally requested that of the Chinese government. Many of the scientists at the Wuhan Institute of Virology have been trained by the U.S. government's PREDICT project. And again, that is very, very, very important. And we wonder, certainly with some of those scientists having been trained by the USAID's PREDICT project, the possibility of malefactors, one or more, being in there is certainly something to be borne in mind. And again, contemplating the masking of genocidal biological warfare intent with the benign, altruistic-sounding pandemic or epidemic prevention moniker that was used by Unit 731. I want to review something that we have looked at in the past. And in 1997, I took note of an article from the New York Times, which we will excerpt here in just a minute. And this is a very scary thing indeed. By Gina Kolata, K-O-L-A-T-A, from the New York Times of March 21st of 1997. We looked at this in, for the record, 55, and we came back to it again. Genetic material from 1918 flu is found. And excerpting this, a group of Defense Department researchers has found genetic material from the notorious Spanish flu virus that killed at least 20 million people worldwide in the influenza pandemic of 1918. Fragments of the virus were found lurking in a formaldehyde-soaked scrap of lung tissue from a 21-year-old soldier who died of the flu nearly 80 years ago. And now, medical experts say, investigators at last hope to answer a question that has troubled them for decades. What made this virus so deadly? Skipping down. The search for the 1918 virus is of more than historical interest, said Dr. Jeffrey K. Taubenberger, T-A-U-B-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Washington, the leader of the team whose report is being published today in the journal Science. Dr. Taubenberger and other researchers hope that understanding the genetic code of the Spanish flu virus might help scientists prepare for the next influenza pandemic, which many scientists think is coming soon. And I would interject a couple things at this point. It may help them prepare for the next influenza pandemic. Might it be used by, again, many of these people, most of them, the vast majority, could be absolutely sincerely altruistic in their efforts. But once you have published this, once you have the information, a very small number of malefactors can put that to annihilating applied use. Might this epidemic prevention project, in fact, have been used for epidemic creation? Bear in mind that the cytokine storms, that C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E storms, that were one of the killing factors in the 1918 influenza epidemic, has also been seen in connection with the SARS-CoV-2/COVID-19 pandemic. Might there have been some genetic research incorporated into that? Again, it is a question I am asking, not a statement I am making ipso facto. And bear in mind, too, that as we looked at in For the Record Program 1121 and other programs, the the 1918 flu virus was recreated in its entirety in 2005. And again, that's something to keep in mind, because that was the 1918 flu virus was basically the Tyrannosaurus rex of upper respiratory infections. And like the Tyrannosaurus rex, it was extinct. And again, as we looked at in For the Record 1121, the technology, and this is the same technology that was going to be used, or that is being used by Professor Ralph Barrich, whom we looked at, to recreate the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19. Again, quoting, the technology immediately created bioweapon worries. Researchers at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, drove that point home in 2005 when they resurrected the influenza virus that killed tens of millions in 1918 and 19. Again, the CDC recreated that virus. It was, like the Tyrannosaurus rex, extinct. This virus was the Tyrannosaurus rex of upper respiratory infections, and they recreated it. It was extinct, but not anymore. And again, I think we need to take a very close look and a very circumspect look at, again, what may be absolutely sincere research at, quote, preventing, unquote, epidemics. It would only take, once those results have been published, it would only take a very small number of malefactors to turn that research into epidemic creation. And again, what was someone of Mengele's outlook? And again, it's not that Josef Mengele and people like Dr. Kurt Blom and the Unit 731 residua and the many others that we have looked at, it wasn't like they were imported into the U.S. and then muddied the pristine waters of American science and politics with their horrible viewpoints. They were brought in specifically to apply their murderous expertise, their genocidal expertise, to our BW programs and chemical warfare programs in the Cold War. So it is perhaps some of the questions that I am asking here will seem extreme to people. I don't think they're extreme at all. Just take a look at what the Trump administration is doing, and bear in mind that the Trump administration is not a one-off phenomenon. Rather, it is the accumulation of forces that have been present in this country all along, and indeed fascism itself is now manifesting into a broad-based popular movement in this country. It was an elite doctrine during and after World War II, as we looked at most recently in, for the record, 1146 through 1150. People like Alan Dulles, people like John Foster Dulles, people like William Casey, people in OSS, people in institutions like Sullivan and Cromwell, people like Frank Wisner, they thought this was great stuff. So they brought these people in and put them to work. And the Republican Party has a functional synthesis with and continuity with the Third Reich and the programs we have been talking about, really beginning before the end of World War II, right on up through the present. That is the significance of that series, for the record, 1146 and 1150. Perhaps as something of a transition element to our next item of discussion. Again, in right-wing propaganda in this country and elsewhere has been also hinting that maybe the Chinese deliberately released the virus. Again, why would they do that? To destroy themselves? And the COVID-19 phenomenon, as I have said so often and documented, has occurred in the context of the full court press against China that involves covert and overt operations in Hong Kong, in Xinjiang province with the Uyghurs, with weaponized media coverage, trade wars, you name it. And concluding with the following, we're going to take a look, I think, at our next program at just what I mean by biopsyop apocalypse. This will hint at this. This by Chris Buckley of the New York Times, of Wednesday, October 7th of 2020. Distrust of China has reached new heights in democratic countries. Xi Jinping celebrates China's battle against the coronavirus as a success, but in the U.S. and other wealthy democracies, the pandemic has driven negative views of China to new heights, a survey published on Tuesday showed. The illness, deaths, and disruption caused by the coronavirus in those countries have intensified already strong public distrust of China, where the virus emerged late last year. The results from the Pew Research Center's survey indicated, quote, unfavorable opinion has soared over the past year, unquote, said the survey on views of China taken this year in 14 countries, including Japan, South Korea, Canada, Germany, Italy, and other European nations. Quote, today, a majority in each of the surveyed countries has an unfavorable opinion on China, unquote. Skipping down. In many Western countries, the coronavirus crisis appears to have deepened public unease about China and Mr. Xi, China's authoritarian leader. Across the 14 countries surveyed, an average of 61% of respondents said China had done a bad job of responding to the outbreak. I would note that given not only the wide variety of symptomatology, it attacks the brain, the liver, the heart, causes blood clotting, COVID-19 pose, it produces dementia, it attacks the brain, it does all kinds of things. Given, too, that over half, or roughly half of people who are infected are asymptomatic but can continue to communicate the virus to other people, it is not surprising that there would have been some confusion initially and certainly some hesitation before making a definitive public statement in China. I don't think the initial response was necessarily very inept at all, given the complexity of the symptoms and the unusual nature of this virus. Again, half of infected people are asymptomatic but can communicate the virus. But this, that is past the point, irrelevant. Note again, in the context of the covert operations against China, the effect that this pandemic has had. And if you are going to effectively decouple the second largest economy on Earth from the rest of the planet, this is a good way to do this. We will continue, however, in our next program because we are all out of time in this one. This concludes For the Record program number 1156, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now, part 16, An Ounce of Prevention, being recorded on October 10th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.